Pardon me?
It's just about 10 o'clock.
That is a little bit, it's a couple minutes slow. So we're going to get ready to begin. So first of all, thank you all for being here. Being here in person or being here electronically? You're still here. Interesting. Are you here? How do you know you're here? What is here? Where is here?
And what if you're there?
And what if you're there? If you were there, I couldn't hear you.
We've had this discussion before. We must continue it.
Well, we're going to suggest you take a moment or so just to ground yourself, center yourself, get a sense of our connection with one another, whether that's in the physical realm or beyond the physical realm. And know that for the next 50 minutes or so, we'll sort of be outside of time. There's not a lot of ego or personality involved in our work together. Doesn't have to be. And when we answer questions, it's not just to satisfy the intellect. It is more to connect with one another on a level of soul or spirit. I was reading over last week's reflection, and it was one of the things I found rather fascinating was that we were quoting T.S. Eliot and Winnie the Pooh together. Makes me believe that, you know, you can find the truth anyplace. But it really was kind of a mixed bag of jumping back and forth from, I wouldn't say from one thing to another, but getting an understanding of things. We were, by the way, we were working on one of the questions from the book and listening to what the guides had to say about the answer. And you will notice that the guides hardly ever answer a question directly. They don't notice, oh, here's what that means. They're going to answer it in such a way that it's going to keep you thinking. Or keep you wondering, might be a better word to use rather than thinking. It's gonna be an open-ended answer. It's never one that's gonna wrap it up in a nice, neat little package and say, okay, here it is. Could just doesn't work that way. Now, for me, being an intellectual snob, at least occasionally, okay, I really like things to be wrapped up nice, neat little package. And I keep finding out it just doesn't work that way. It's messy. It's open-ended. It's not complete. Now, what will happen to most of us is that you'll hear an answer that might be complete for a while for your intellect, your thinking mind. And then all of a sudden, about maybe 5 minutes later or 10 minutes later or 15 minutes, you're going to go, yeah, but what about... That's the way my mind works. Okay, it's satisfied for my... But see, that's just the way the mind works. It's not a bad thing. It's just the way it works. It's constantly looking for new information, constantly looking for ways to understand, constantly looking for ways to sort of pigeonhole things to sort of wrap them up and put it in a box. And I can't deny that part of myself that's still here. But when we talk about knowing or realization, we're speaking about knowing that goes beyond the intellectual mind, goes beyond the thinking mind. Still contains it, but it doesn't necessarily have a, I guess the best way I can put it, doesn't necessarily have a direct answer or a direct way of saying, okay, this is it. And this will satisfy you in time and memorial. It just doesn't happen. Doesn't happen for me anyway. And I'm kind of glad it doesn't happen.
Jerry, does that apply to any subject?
What was that again?
Does that apply to any subject or any?
Well,
I mean, how do you derive truth in constant?
You know, we could. Sure. Well, let's take an example out of science, for example. Not too long ago, our world was understood through the aspect or through the eyes of Newtonian physics, that everything was reducible to a single thing like an atom, and that atoms interacted with one another like pool balls on a table. One would hit one another when the other one would move. And that was the laws of motion and the laws of thermodynamics were basically the way we looked at the world, especially through the eyes of science, through the eyes of physics. And it wasn't too much later on that some people started to discover there's more to it than that, much more, that it's not solid object. In fact, one of the most metaphysical and wonderful things that physics discovered is that the observer affects the results of the experiment. Oh, really? That was totally out of bounds years ago. Just did not fit the picture. And so now just taking a look at that as an example, what we are doing in a spiritual realm. And right now what happens is you notice that science and spirituality start coming together a little bit closer. You run into people like Gary Zukav, right? Who is a physicist, a scientist, right? Who gets on Oprah, right? Because he wrote a book on metaphysics. How'd that happen? So what people are learning, especially people in having to do with science, is that, you know, this is open-ended. This might be an answer that fits with our understanding today, but our understanding tomorrow, it might not fit at all. It might be something more, something that we could not even imagine. Something that we could not even imagine. So I think it crosses the boundaries of just spiritual thinking, even into our understanding of the world. And so that now understanding something is never, this is my understanding of this today. This is how I perceive it works today. It might change tomorrow or might be expanded upon tomorrow. It might come from a different angle tomorrow.
Jerry.
Yeah.
So this is how I think it works today. The last night I was reading a talk that Emmett Fox had apparently given at a Unity church years ago, and he boiled it down to two statements. One is that life is a state of consciousness. In other words, what we are conscious of, what we bring into our consciousness, what we are aware of, that's how we perceive life.
Mm-hmm.
And then like attracts like. So what we are bringing into, or what we are aware of, we're going to bring more of that into our life. So it kind of is in harmony with what you were talking about. The observer is going to affect what we observe.
Yeah.
And so that's, anyway, for some reason that brought me peace last night. And I needed to be aware of, oh, that's what I'm thinking about, what I am aware of. How do I perceive my existence at this time?
Yeah. I was thinking that, first of all, my perception of things, as enlightened as it might appear, my perception of things is always limited.
Yeah.
Because there's always more, I wouldn't say more information, there is always more to take in, more to absorb. And so I need to start off with that premise. I think it was Socrates who said the wisest person in the world is the one who says he doesn't know anything.
Yeah, no.
The other piece to that is something that Peace Pilgrim said. And she said, when you live up to the light within you, when you live up to the light that you already have, more will be given to you. When you live up to the light that you already have, more will be given to you. Now, my ego and my personality wants more, 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 more. And it's, no, relax. When you open yourself up to the broadest understanding or the broadest perception that you can have in this moment of time, then more will be given to you. But as long as you're grasping, as long as you're holding on to what you think is right, what you think is true, there's no way you can get in there. It's a locked door.
Mm-hmm.
And the mystic Gurdjieff put it this way. He said, you have to realize you're in prison in order to be able to get out. If you think you're free, good. You're never really going to experience it. So when you realize, and when I say in prison, I don't mean that as a punishment so much. I realize that the only way I realize that I have blinders on is when I take them off. So most of the time, if not all the time, I'm walking around with blinders on, but I don't even know I have blinders on until somebody comes along or something comes along and rips them off. And of course, even after, that's an aha moment. But even after that aha moment starts, there's another set of blinders that are probably there that are blocking my view, but I don't even know they're blocking my view. And so it's being okay with that. That's not a punishment or a judgment. It's the realization of don't become attached to your perception at this moment, because your perception by its very nature is limited. And as soon as you become attached to your perception, you've closed the door on growth. You've closed the door on stretching. To say, you know, this is my perception right now. And I realize that my perception can still stretch and grow and become more than what it is. Scott Peck in The Road Less Traveled defined love as being that state of consciousness where a person stretch yourself for either your own spiritual growth or the growth of another. The ability to stretch oneself for one's own spiritual growth. And with it, the idea behind that is that you can't really grow spiritually unless you're willing to stretch. And who knows what's going to come around the next corner? I don't. Oh, is lurking there all the time, just waiting to be discovered.
Jerry, is the word fluid?
Jerry.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sometimes I perceive things that I don't understand, and it's usually in a dream. Mm-hmm. And I had a dream once that I'm riding in a school bus and it's just me and my sister, and I don't know who was driving, but anyway, we wrecked and we went into the river and we're drowning down in the river in the bus, and someone pulled us out. Somebody saved us. Somebody came and got us out of the bus in my dream. And I was doing regression therapy at the time, and my doctor, Abrams, said, how did they know you were drowning? I said, I don't know how they knew I needed help. She said, well, I want you to go back and ask them in your dream. Ask them, how did they know? So I did. And so I said, how did y'all know we needed your help? And they said, we just know. Never could get an answer.
That's what we got.
We just know. Yeah, that's, and I wanted an answer. And they said, we just know.
So you can ask yourself that question. How do you know that you know?
I don't know.
And it doesn't matter.
I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
It did kind of matter to me. Who are you? Where'd you come from? How'd you know? It did kind of matter to me. You know, somebody that loves you that much, that they're watching over you. Who are you?
That's right. Somebody else was online here. Was that Paula? Okay.
No, not me.
It was Jim. Yeah.
So, what comes to me?
I'm going to need you to speak up a little bit more.
Yeah, what comes to me just what you're sharing is the word fluid. But what also comes after the fluidity, that I'm fluid, in terms of my perception of this or that changes. Then my ego mind says, oh, you're just fickle.
Are you what?
You're just fickle.
Oh.
Because you're fluid. That's what I'm hearing. Spirits are fluid. And then the humanness of it, the ego, and it says, oh, you're just fickle because how do you define yourself if my perception of this or that, even myself, is always changing.
Okay, go ahead.
So I just,
and see, the thing about it is, metaphysically, I believe, is you don't define yourself. It's only the little self that's looking for a definition.
Okay.
The higher consciousness, the higher self, the divine being within, whatever you want to call it, okay? Isn't looking for that kind of satisfaction. It is a paradoxical state of being in isness and stretching at the same time. Let me give you an example of that, that the human mind can understand this one, but it's more of a spiritual example, I think. I've used this one a lot. Let's suppose I'm with my grandson, Finn. You guys know that I have a very indescribable connection with. Now I realize that I can love him exactly where he is. Whatever's going on, I can love him unconditionally exactly where he is. And I can also love and embrace his becoming, whatever that might happen a bit. And they can both exist at the same time in my spiritual being. My intellect's gonna say, oh, well, you gotta be one or the other.
Yes.
But my heart knows, no, I can do both. I can love you exactly where you are, and I can also love your becoming as well. Now I'm wondering if we could do that to ourselves. Even just for a moment. Does anybody have any stuff might have been left over from last week? Again, I wouldn't, if you don't mind, I'd encourage you to read over, because I'm going to do this again myself, to read over last week's reflection. Because it's just, I read it over again this morning, and there's just so much stuff in there that it might be helpful. If not, don't worry about it. I'm on page 153. By the way, if you're new and you don't have a book, don't worry about it. We read from it out loud. If you want to get a book, you can probably find a used copy on Amazon for a few bucks. It might have somebody else's highlights on there, but that's up to you. Well, I can't do that. Somebody else underlined it. I'm stuck with somebody else's underline. Oh, really? Isn't it interesting when we come... And now I'm talking about myself here.
I've seen used books that have marks that are actually useful. You get
you say to yourself, now what were they thinking when they underlined that? It did make an impression on me.
I think I got a used copy of this for $2 and couldn't tell it had ever been read.
Interesting. So you didn't need somebody else's highlighting.
No, I just went on Amazon and picked used and couldn't tell it had ever been read.
There it is. You never know what you, it's kind of like a grab bag. You never know what you're going to get. Alice's Restaurant. I'm on page 153. We're going to read this question and then we're going to see where it takes us this morning. In regards to standing in judgment of your fellow man, what about evil people, mentally ill people? How can I see the Creator in the form of a rapist, a murderer, one who might do harm to myself or my family? Am I wrong to fear those who do harm to others? How do I see the perfection in all these people? Great question. Philosophers have been trying to answer that question for centuries. Philosophically, theologically, it's called how to explain what we sometimes refer to as the problem of evil. How do we explain that, especially if we believe in a loving God? John.
We've talked about that, Jerry, in this class, and we've always said we have to see their pain. We've talked about this in class here before, and we always say that we have to see their pain.
Well, that's one thing we're doing is we're seeing the pain or the. Actually, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day about the same thing. We were talking about something specific, but it had to do with some of the horrendous shootings that have been going on recently. I mean, the latest one was just idiotic. Somebody was complaining about his neighbor shooting a gun off. The guy says, "Well, I'll show you. I'll shoot your kids." What? There was a song that Harry Chapin wrote years ago called Sniper. And it happened, it was about a real event that happened in I think it was a college in Dallas where this troubled young man, took his rifle up to the bell tower and started shooting people from there. And Harry wrote this song about reflective of this individual. This was years before we were even talking about anything like this, and talked about what kind of pain does it take? What kind of pain does a person have to be in to cause that kind of violence? Twisted the whole thing around. Didn't answer the question. I said, think about this as well.
John got a question.
Yeah, John.
Last week, during the service, there was one person here in the vestibule who was having screaming. Several people went out, for several days, I had post traumatic stress. And this question spoke this. You see him as a person different eyes along there because of my own fear.
Okay. But you did come to a point where you could do that, right?
We can't hear you. We can't hear him.
Okay, just a minute, guys.
Well, somewhat, I think I better.
The desire is still there, isn't it?
Yes.
And that's the beginning. We had a disturbance here in church last week. And one of our homeless guy who's maybe borderline psychotic was causing some problems outside, and a number of people went out to quiet him down, take care of things. I think they finally turned to call the police, see if they could talk him down. Anyway, it got straightened. There wasn't any violence. Nobody got physically hurt. Right? But I know it was extremely disturbing to some people. And John was probably one of the first ones on the scene there, and it was disturbing to him. What he was reflecting upon was that for the last few days after that was some post-traumatic stress of not just cleaning myself out of the shock that did to my system, but how can I begin to see this person with the eyes of the Christ, especially when I'm all wrapped up in my own fear, my own anxiety. And John was saying it took a period of time to be able to reach a point where things started loosening up a little bit more inside. Is that an okay way of saying it? And the word that I focused in on and what John was talking about was not just my intention, but my willingness and my desire to see you with the eyes of the Christ. And the reason why I focus in on that one is because I believe that my desire, my willingness, is actually a part of my, or an, it is a reflection of my ability to see with the eyes of the Christ. It might not be there the way I would like it to be yet. How did Thomas Merton put that in his wonderful prayer? I realize that the desire to please you does in fact please you. That is such a beautiful line. The desire to please you does in fact please you. Although I may be going on the wrong road and not know where the hell I'm going, the desire to please you does in fact please you. So don't downgrade desire. Don't say, well, I would like to be able to see you with the eyes of the Christ. I desire to see you with the eyes of the Christ, but I don't yet. So there must be something wrong with me. I'm not there yet. Well, look at where I am. Look at where I am and embrace where I am. In this state of mind, in this state of consciousness that goes far beyond my fear and my anxiety. And let me embrace that. It might not be perfect. Doesn't matter. I know that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I wish to have that desire in everything that I'm doing. You might want to read that prayer over again sometime. Real short thing. You can Google it. Just put in Thomas Merton prayer. My Lord God, I have no idea where I am going. Mm-hmm. Take you about 30 seconds to say to yourself or out loud.
Hey, Jerry, just got feedback on John said, I cried the rest of the service. I cried because I know this individual. You know this individual. And this individual is actually.
Can you guys hear him okay?
This individual had attended when he did it by himself as he.
Right.
He did it by himself as she now. And our men's group on Saturday. And I would see this individual even out, you know, right before. Removed, they used to actually serve across on the bridge. And I could see the individual. And we have further conversations. And it seemed that they were doing better.
Mm-hmm.
And to witness that last Sunday, I just cried.
Mm-hmm.
I just cried. And thinking about it right now, I'm hoping our prayer is that you're better, becoming better. But it would be one thing if, no, maybe not. It didn't in terms of not knowing the person, but to actually know the person and have conversation with the person. I was hard to focus the rest of the time.
Sure, understand that. Can you get a sense of just where you are right now, everybody? That I still wonder about, you know, the answer to that question, what do you do about mass murderers? What do you do about rapists? What do you do about this? What do you do about that? But get a sense of your openness, your desire, your willingness to see beyond what the material world is showing us. And as you do that, to get a little bit of a sense of how minuscule this lifetime is compared to all of the other thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of lifetimes we've already lived. To focus in on this one particular incident, this one particular moment, is absolutely ridiculous. Doesn't feel that way sometimes, but it is. Somebody said, Buddha, will you tell us about coming back here again and again and again? And he said, I want you to imagine a mountain, a mile high and a mile wide. And every 100 years, a raven flies over this mountain, and the raven has a silk handkerchief in its beak. Every 100 years, a raven flies over this mountain, and the silk handkerchief rubs against the top of the mountain. However long it takes, or how many times it takes for that mountain to be worn down completely, that's how many times you've been doing this. Now you can use that as a metaphor, or whatever you want to do with that. But imagine what it would be like to take an idea like that and put it in perspective of what I'm focusing on this. Oh, the toilet doesn't work. Or I'm constipated. Oh, really? My whole life revolving around that one particular piece of my large intestine. First of all, I can compare that just to this lifetime by itself, and it's ridiculous. But then when I compare it to all the hundreds of thousands of other lifetimes, it becomes ludicrous. Why focus on that one?
Sure.
Yeah.
Seeing with the eyes of Christ, that equate to the body being peaceful, or can you see with the eyes of Christ and be fearful?
Say that again, please.
So I feel like I can see everybody with the eyes of Christ.
Okay.
The killers there, but there also exists fear in me when I see them. I mean, like being, I was with the guy that had a gun, and I was really scared of that. Now I can see the Christ in me.
Okay.
But I'm also, it arises other things in me, other than what I would say, God brings out. Mm-hmm. If I'm with God, I'm peaceful.
Okay. The only answer I've got to that one is you're not finished yet. All
so, right. But what I guess the question is if you're seeing with the eyes of Christ, are you at peace? With,
yeah,
whoever you're with.
You're in non-judgmentalness, you're at peace. Yeah. That's one of the ways I can determine that, right?
Okay.
Am I in, or we might say, am I in higher consciousness? Mm-hmm. If I'm in higher consciousness, I am not in judgment. I am at peace. I am open. Calm. Safe. There's nothing I have to protect. Jenna.
I don't mean to make light of anything, but I was singing during that last Sunday, and I felt absolutely no fear. Maybe we need more music in our lives.
You know, I think there's lots of ways that we can do that. I think music is one of the special ones that all of us in some ways can identify with. right? Whether we're performing or listening or practicing or just doing it for ourselves, right? It is, one of my teachers said, it's one of the most important gifts that God has given humanity is the gift of music, the gift of song, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
So the guides are using this language of seeing with the eyes of Christ, which, like, so when a difficult situation comes up, I can use my mind and I can say, remember, this is a child of God, just like you. They're responding in fear, even though it's coming out as violence. But what you're talking about sounds more like when we say seeing with the eyes of Christ, it's more of an embodiment of the Christ, more than just using my intellect to apply a template, which is, you know, in the course or different things.
Right.
Okay, remember, this is a child of God. They're loved just as much as you are. But you're talking about, like, seeing with the eyes of Christ is an embodiment and a harmony with the Christ vibration.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I agree. There's a difference between the thought and the vibration.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so to go back to a little bit to what Laura was saying, you know, I can be in this higher vibration of seeing you with the eyes of the Christ, of knowing the truth of who you are, is another way of putting that. So rather, sometimes we get it when we use the word seeing, we kind of get lost in the physical sense of that. But knowing the truth of who you are, and then because I'm not finished yet, I'm still working on my stuff, there are going to be some things that come along that bam, all of a sudden shake up that knowing. Say, oh, what about this one? And then what I have to do anyway is I have to go a couple of breaths here. I got to recenter myself, get back to that higher vibration of realization. And at the same time, I want to be able to be open and compassionate of what, you know, when I say, what can I do with this other individual? I might not be able to do anything on the physical plane, but I might be able to do a lot on the spiritual plane. What can I do? See, the way my brain translated, what can I do for this person here? But the real thing is, what can I do for myself who's having trouble seeing him with the eyes of the Christ? That's where the real problem is. I mean, they've got their stuff, obviously, that needs to be worked on, but only they are going to be the ones who are going to be able to work on that. I've got to work on myself. What's interfering with my seeing? And again, not making that into a judgment or a bad thing, but making it into a realization. Oh, wow. I thought I had finished with that one.
Well, and that word he just used, embodiment, I think that's a really good word for that. It brings up to me Peace Pilgrim, she's faced with that person that was going to rape her. And that I can see clearly now. That
she was at that moment, probably more moments than that, but she consciously was at that place of no anger, no fear. And what was fascinating about that was that because there was no anger or no fear, there was nothing this guy, who maybe who had the intention of killing her and raping, there was nothing this guy had to push up against. You know, push up again, and there's nothing there. That would be another way, vibrationally, if we can get a sense of that, is when I am seeing or living out of the consciousness of knowing with the eyes or the knowledge or the wisdom of Christ, is that there's nothing to push against. It's just nothing there. I haven't used that term in a while, so thank you for reminding me of that. There's nothing to push against. So let's suppose you're in an argument with someone you love. Now, when there's a lot of anger and a lot of fear and a lot of angst, there's an awful lot to push against. And there's an awful lot that I feel like is pushing against me. But let's suppose I use those words Jim was talking about being in the flow. Going, here I am in this situation where I'm angry or fearful or got PTSD. But that's just this moment. I know that can change a moment from that. So I sort of take a deep breath and I allow myself to go, just to go into that flow of life thing. And all of a sudden, there's nothing to push up against. It's like being an Aikido master, right? The Aikido man, the enemy runs in and he goes over your shoulder. Didn't touch him, didn't punch him, didn't kick him, didn't do anything. It just kind of moved one way and there was no resistance because there was nothing to push up against. Here he comes again. How often do I need to do that? Till I don't need to do it anymore. Craig.
Yeah, that reminds me that Edgar Casey has a book called There Is a River. And, you know, Abraham Hicks had said one time, one of my favorite things was, there is a stream of well-being, which either you are in harmony with or not, but there is not a stream of unwell-being. And that reminds me also of what we used to say about the eagle doesn't fight the snake on the ground. The eagle takes it up into the air. So many times we feel fear over something. My work is to get back to the stream of well-being and then relook at the situation with a different spirit of glasses, right?
Yeah. I mean,
that's my cue, right?
Yeah. For me, and I came across this teaching a few years ago. And I don't know where it came. I know it was too clean for me to have invented it myself. So I'm not sure where it came from, but it didn't come from anything that I read before. But it was offering me a way of distinguishing, not judging so much, but distinguishing between making a choice in my actions and in my thoughts of higher consciousness or lower consciousness. And it was simply put so perfectly for me, asking myself the question, does what I'm thinking of or what the action that I'm planning, does it open my heart or does it close my heart? Now, wherever that came from, it sort of put the entire spiritual practice, the entire spiritual life in a nutshell. Does it open my heart or does it close my heart? So, you know, we can get caught up with what this guy, what this person was talking about. Of, am I wrong to fear those who are doing harm? What about those? What about a rapist and a murderer? What about who might do harm to me? Evil people, mentally ill people. How do I see the perfection in all of these people? Does what I'm doing, does it open my heart or does it close my heart? I got a couple of minutes. I'm going to read some of this and I might not get through it. But you're going to have to sit with some of this yourself. Unless anybody else has anything you want to say first before we get into the guy's answer here.
I want to say something, Jerry. I ask myself, what is this all about? And my answer comes to me is that we all have to see each other through the eyes of Christ. That's what it's all about. That's how evil and all of this is going to end. If everybody in the world could see love and see through the eyes of Christ, we wouldn't have this evil. There'd only be love. That's how I see it.
Evil is a lack of something. It's not a thing by itself. Okay? Like darkness is not a thing. Darkness is not a thing by itself. Darkness doesn't exist when you turn a light on. What we are calling evil, or whatever other words we might be using to describe a person or an event, is a lack of something rather than a substance by itself. And so when I get caught up in hating the lack in someone or something, You can see the many layers of illusion that I've kind of got myself lost in. Whereas what we are suggesting here is recognizing that, let's say darkness is probably the best example I can give of this. Darkness by itself is not a thing. It's the absence of something. And so when I say, what can I do to change this or change my perception, is ask myself, now what do I need to get rid of? Or you need to get rid of the darkness, you need to get rid of this, you need to get rid of that. You need to get rid of your anger, you need to get rid of your fear. What do I need to fill myself up with? What do I need to do to, like Janet was talking about with music, what do I do to feed my soul? That fills up what is empty, what is missing, what is lacking. Whenever I am angry, upset, disturbed, in a sense of separation, it's because I am living in lack, something missing, rather than something being there. How did, in the Moody Blues, question of balance, the last one of this poem called The Balance. But this guy, after he had journeyed and his feet were sore, he came upon an orange grove and he took to himself an orange and he tasted it. It was good. And it goes on and on and on until it finally hits this line. And he sees his enemy like unto himself. And with that awareness, all of a sudden, everything turns around. He becomes at peace. Sees his enemy like unto himself. That what I'm seeing in them, the evil that I'm seeing in them, is something that is lacking within me. How can I allow that to be filled myself? And so, you know, it'd be really interesting to imagine when we come walking in here, either physically or electronically, come walking in here on Sunday morning, What occurs to me most often is I come walking in here with the openness and the desire to be fed because I'm hungry. I'm probably always hungry, but I don't realize it all the time. Not that something's missing so much, but something needs to be nurtured inside me. Something needs to be nurtured inside you. We're going to be closing up, so we'll get to that. It's really interesting. We'll get to our answer next week.
In another dimension.
Let's just take a minute.
That's called tease.
So you can close your eyes if you like. I'll enclose a longer meditation. But we're in a little bit of a different environment than we were in Unity downtown, so we have to... We have to kind of clean up the room before we go. Not terrible, but it takes a few minutes. But close your eyes if you'd like for a moment or so. And ask yourself this question and just allow yourself to be open to the answer. What needs to be fed and nurtured inside of me today? What needs to be fed to be nurtured inside of me today? Could be really, really simple. Could be real simple. I wish I had one of those things, Rhonda, when I fall asleep. You might remember that in, no, it's too long a story. I won't get into it. We got to go. We'll finish up on that next week. Thank you guys for being here. I love you all. Be at peace. Take care.
Thanks, Jerry. Wonderful. Bye, everyone.
Perfect. Bye, everyone. You. Have a good week.
See you.